Good afternoon, everybody. This is Dr. Dennis Tian. Welcome to the inaugural edition of the Dr. Football Podcast. I'm here with my producer, my main man, Justin Fine, and we are going to talk some NFL football, and that's what this podcast is going to be about every edition. And we have a ton to talk about because we very, very cleverly timed the inaugural edition of this podcast to time up with the NFL draft. And there's a lot that happened the last few days. Justin, you ready to go?
I'm ready to go. Yeah, let's get into it. It's been too long without football.
How you feeling, Justin? You feeling all right?
You know what? I've felt better, but
I hear that.
Whenever you throw the mic on, you gotta put a happy face on, right?
So. I hear you. Well, listen, we're gonna get you through this this little yep. Sunday morning fever with some football talk. Okay.
There we go.
So it was about a month ago that Robert Kraft spoke about the franchise. And Robert Kraft has been the owner of the New England Patriots for 27 years. He bought the team in January of 1994. And I'm not sure if any time in that 27 years I've ever heard Robert Kraft be quite as outspoken and pointed about a coach on his roster or a player on his team as he was in those comments. In fact, I was stunned because he said a couple things. And one of the things he said was that he specifically mentioned how poor the drafting was, okay? Bill Belichick, I think, was put on notice with those comments. And I think that there were big changes, okay, afoot in the Patriots organization because of that. Belichick is not getting the leeway that he deserves for a man with his resume and accomplishments. And it's for one very simple reason. It's because he pushed Tom Brady out the door. Brady didn't retire. He didn't age out of the system. He forced him out. We all know that when it comes down to it, he forced him out. We're going to talk in a few minutes about how that may have been the worst personnel decision in the history of modern pro sports. I mean, you might have to go back a century for that. But my question is, are the Patriots' operation changed because of everything that has happened in the last year? Or is this just Bill Belichick doing what he always does? Is there something different, Justin, about the way the Patriots are going to operate moving forward? Do we have clues and windows into that because of all the problems of the last year?
Well, you know, it definitely feels different, right? I mean,
it does.
When's the last time you can remember the Patriots going out in the offseason and, you know, dropping the type of money that they've dropped in free agency? That's for one, right? So if we just look at what, you know, they've done in terms of like going out and acquiring, you know, some studs on both sides of the ball. And then also, too, I mean, you know, granted, it's a little skewed because you had Tom Brady, you know, for all those years. But how often does you know, Belichick go and take a skill player with the first pick of the draft, right? And so, you know, obviously we need a quarterback, but you go and you take Mac Jones. You know, I think it's very interesting, which I do want to get to because the whole Mac Jones pick, I think could have actually, you know, blown up in their face had some other team snagged them. Like, we are very lucky that he wound up falling.
Well, that was actually my next topic, but let's make a list of all the things that have been different about the Patriots in the last few months or even year.
Yep.
Okay. Number one is the draft. The draft
for sure
was fundamentally different than what it's ever been before. They don't take skill position players.
No.
They usually trade down. They've only traded up a couple times. They traded up.
Yep.
So those are two big differences. The free agency thing, and we're going to talk about some of that in a little bit, that's different. That's a big, radical, seismic shift in how they operate. Did you see the video that the Patriots released, the 2-minute blurb of the draft that they put out on Facebook? Did you happen to see that?
I did not, I don't think.
Well, let me summarize for you, because one of the things that was really interesting is they released this video on social media, and before they officially make the Mac Jones pick, Bill Belichick goes around the room and asks everyone, are you okay with this pick? Are you okay with this pick? That doesn't sound like the Bill Belichick that we've heard about, and we haven't seen a lot of what happens in the draft room, right? But that sounds like a different Bill Belichick, maybe a Bill Belichick that's getting some, you know, gentle nudging, quote unquote, from Robert Kraft saying, look, you need to be more collaborative in this draft room because we're failing at picking players in the draft.
Yeah. look, I think historically, if we look back on it, I'm not ready to say that he's been an awful drafter. I think especially as of late, I'm still not ready to call it quits on what's his name? Receiver.
N'Keal Harry.
N'Keal Harry.
That's the hangover, Justin.
Yeah. That's the hangover talk. Sorry, guys. Brain's a little slow this morning. Excuse me. I'm still trying to get a fire in. We'll get there, I promise. But yeah, N'Keal Harry. I'm still not ready to give up on N'Keal Harry. I look at some of these homegrown players like Dietrich Wise. Like I'm not ready to give up on all of them. You know,
And there are a couple of them that are good, but you have to admit. I mean, I always thought the narrative that Bill Belichick wasn't a good GM was BS, like total BS until about the last 4 or 5 years. Like if you look from 2000 to 2016, they never had a problem filling this roster.
No.
And there were highs and lows in the 20 years. Like they hit a low patch around like 2007, 2008. And then it really showed up on the field after that undefeated season in 07, you know, 09, they weren't that good. 2010, they were better, but there were holes, you know. Then they got hot again in the draft in 2010, right? That was the year they got McCourty. They got Gronkowski. They got a couple other players. They had a couple hot drafts and it showed on the field. They became a Super Bowl contender. They won three championships with that group of players.
Yeah.
Belichick never had a problem picking players or filling out the roster until the last like 4 or 5 years. And at first I said, well, maybe it's a little bad luck, but at this point, don't you have to say that there's something a little off about the way that they're picking players? I mean, they've blown way, way too many picks. And there've been a couple things that I think are concerning. One is there's all these stories about Belichick going off rogue and I'm picking this guy because I know the coach. That's concerning when you don't hit. And then the other thing is, look how many scouts have left their front office in the last few years. Doesn't get talked about enough. Huge thing. When people leave operations like that, you got to wonder, is it because they're dysfunctional?
I mean, yeah, look, certainly, I think what we're seeing is definitely a result of things not being as perfect maybe as, you know, we'd like to think with the Bill Belichick era in the system. Everyone wants to talk about how he's a genius, but I think when it comes to, like you said, certain areas of drafting, et cetera, when he has to wear both, you know, the coaching and GM hat, you can start to, you know, poke holes and flaws in, you know, some of his philosophies and things he's doing. And like you said, there is a lot of turnover, a lot of people leaving. I mean, look, you could also attribute that to saying, like, you know, when you work for such a successful organization, it's a good jump off point. A lot of people want to go work there just to make a name for themselves for a while and then, move on. But, it is interesting, you know, so.
Whether you get a guy in the sixth round or in the first round, if he's a player, he's a player.
Yeah.
You know, and Belichick always, you know, he may not be great. I mean, the second round seems to be where they have always had the most trouble. But they pull guys out of the fourth, fifth, and sixth round.
Right.
Like no franchise in the NFL has.
Right.
And there's something to that. And I think Belichick knows, and I've always said this, that there is a like intrinsic amount of uncertainty with drafting guys. And he'd rather take three guys that have like a 30% chance of hitting than one guy that has a 60% chance of hitting, you know? And that's why they're always pulling these guys late out of the draft. But for whatever reason, it stopped working. And in the last couple of years, and I mean, let's face it, their roster last year, they were 7-9. That was really a 3-13, 4-12 team. Belichick's still a great coach. He coached that team up, but they weren't that good. Okay. You hit on one of the things that I think is really important to know. And I haven't heard anyone mention this yet, but people are talking and saying, what happens if Mac Jones doesn't fall to 15?
Right.
And it was abundantly clear from watching the draft that the Patriots had the opportunity to trade up. Yep. Everything broke their way, starting with the Niners picking Lance. And Denver didn't take a quarterback. A couple of the other teams that had the chance to trade down or take quarterbacks didn't do it. Everything was going right. But when you get to pick like 12, 13, 14, and Mac Jones is still there, Justin Fields is still there up until 11. Okay, Chicago swoops in and takes him. When Minnesota's on the clock at 14, you're expecting them to trade out of that pick or to take the quarterback, or at least I was, and they didn't. And it makes me wonder what would have happened if Mac Jones hadn't fallen to 15.
Right.
And to me, what this tells me is that Bill Belichick is completely over Tom Brady. He's not looking for the next Tom Brady. Okay. Belichick knows we're not going to find the next Tom Brady. Okay, Brady was in the NFL for 21 years. He won how many Super Bowls so far? 7. That means he didn't win 14. That means there's more than one way to skin a cat, okay? So Belichick's focus right now is on building a good team that can win. Yep. And there's more than one way to do that. If Mac Jones didn't fall to them, Belichick would have been happy to move on to the next option, whether that's making it work with Cam Newton, being more aggressive with Garoppolo, bringing someone else in. Okay, I don't know what it was, but he is over the idea of, I'm going to bring in the next superstar franchise guy. Now, maybe he will get that with Mac Jones. We don't know. But Belichick's not forcing it.
No, and so look, I think it's very interesting too. You know, when you look at Mac Jones coming from Alabama, obviously Saban, Belichick, very close, coming from, you know, the same coaching tree, I believe, right? And so what has Nick Saban always done with his success? You know, they have obviously kind of paralleled success, you know, in NCAA and NFL, but what has Nick Saban always done, right? The one thing that I think Belichick would like to do, and that's continuously win without a stud quarterback, right? Alabama always has, you know, NFL-level skill players, an NFL O-line, an NFL, you know, defense. But I've never, ever been impressed, really, with any of the quarterbacks that have come out of Alabama as of late. I've never been I was never a Tua guy. I was never an A.J. McCarron guy, a Jalen Hurts guy.
Maybe ironic that Hurts might be the best one,
right,
to come out.
Exactly.
And he got pushed out of there.
Exactly. And so it's just, you know, for me, I've never thought that, you know, you can accurately judge an Alabama quarterback. I think it's a little skewed. But I think he continuously proves that you do not need a stud quarterback to go on and win championships. And I think that's what Bill Belichick wants to do, right? He wants to build a beefed up defense. He came in and brought, like, you know, a bunch of skilled players in. He shared up the tight end position, which we needed. Go out and get Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith. He brings in some, you know, some free agents at the wide receiver position. And now I think he literally just wants to employ that whole, you know, Alabama mentality.
Absolutely. He is so over the idea of a franchise quarterback. He would have been more than content. Okay. Yeah. This was not their plan all along. He did exactly what he's been doing for the last 20 years. He took the best available guy that fell to him.
Yeah.
And he's going to plug him into the system now. And if he turns into a great quarterback, great. And if he doesn't, he'll figure something else out. But he's not going to try and force it and bring, like, some franchises, and we're going to talk about this. I think even on Thursday night, a couple teams forced it.
Yeah.
And he's not going to do that. He's going to build a program, and he's going to win with what he has. And that's what he's been doing for 20 years. You look at 2006, you know, they went into the year with almost no one at wide receiver that year. And they should have won a Super Bowl. If they had a player or two wide receiver, they probably win the Super Bowl that year. That was the year they lost in Indy in the AFC Championship game. He was totally comfortable going into the year with a subpar receiver core because he built a team, you know, and his team was capable of winning. That's what it is to him. It's about building a program and not forcing it to find the next guy, because those guys are diamonds. They don't come along very often.
Well,
he knows that.
And so actually that kind of leads me into a question, you know, that I have for you that I'm curious to hear your answer is. So look, Belichick, you know, winning six Super Bowls with the Patriots. Here's kind of my, you know, proposition. What is the Belichick handicap? And what I mean by that is, how many of those Super Bowls do you think we would still have come away with that the team that we had, Tom Brady under center, and, you know, throw in an average NFL coach in there, right? Do we have maybe two Super Bowls, one Super Bowl, three Super Bowls, as opposed to the six? What is the Belichick effect?
I'm gonna split the baby right down the middle.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say 3-3.
Okay.
Because even the other historically great quarterbacks have won one or two.
Right.
Right. I mean, Aikman won three. You know, Elway won two. Rodgers has won one, Breeze won one, Manning won two. He didn't do much for the second one.
Yeah.
You know, it's two. One or two is what a lot of the other greats won. Montana won four.
Yeah.
Obviously. I think Brady comes in at three if he has the average coach.
Yeah.
And I think Belichick maybe finds a way to win three if he's got a good quarterback, but not Tom Brady.
So building off of that then, if, you know, if we're saying that the Belichick handicap is roughly three Super Bowls for the Patriots franchise, is it fair to potentially say that Belichick has lost us as many, if not more, Super Bowls than he's won us If we're attributing three of those Super Bowls strictly to having a Belichick behind the helm leading that team, can we look back on at least three seasons where the Patriots should have, and you just named one, against Indy that year when yep. we would have gone on to beat the Bears. Because I think there's definitely Philly when we sat Malcolm Butler.
Yep.
I think you can go back over the last like two decades and pick out more than three or four seasons where maybe Belichick's hubris or a decision that none of us really understand still to this day came back and cost us a Super Bowl.
Well, Belichick has weaknesses. There's no right. question about it. His weakness has always been he's stubborn and he's arrogant. I mean that's his. Those are his weaknesses right there.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to take the good with the bad. He gets you there every year, or he at least he did until last year. But sometimes, you know, I don't know. Maybe he sees things differently yeah. than the average person sees, and maybe that's why his methods are always getting you there. Okay, he has a different way of thinking of things. But you're right. I mean, you look at these decisions out of context or by themselves, and they don't make sense. And there's no question that he's made some pretty big mistakes over the years
yeah.
that are really hard to understand. But then when I think of those mistakes, and then I think, well, yeah, he made those mistakes in one year, but look at, he keeps you in it every year. And they've been contending every year until last year. So I think you do have to take the good with the bad with him, but there's no question he's made some big mistakes. Justin, 18, if you go back and look at all the quarterbacks drafted in the first round of the NFL draft in the last 20 years, there's yep. something like 63 or 65 guys have taken. Of those, depending on how you define success, 18 to 23 of those guys are successful quarterbacks. And that means there are a lot of guys that are just complete and total outright flameouts, you know,
yep.
Jake Locker and Jamarcus Russell and maybe Mitchell Trubisky now is going to be a backup and EJ Manuel. I mean, there's a lot of frightening amount of guys
yeah.
that were drafted in the first round that just couldn't even play.
Right.
And then there's some guys that were kind of okay, but not great. And then there's very few guys actually that are clear hits.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess what I'm going to ask you is, you know, of the five guys drafted, who are the hits and who are the misses? Because historically, you look at the average, of those five guys, you're going to get two or three hits and two or three misses. So who do you think are the hits and who do you think are the misses?
So it's ironic because I think the biggest hit might be the player that I actually hate the move the most, which is what the Bears did to go up and get Justin Field. I love the Bears getting Justin Fields. I think he's a great quarterback. I think he'll be good for their franchise. I hate how much they gave up for him.
They gave up a huge price.
They gave up a ton. And I really feel like that like puts, you know, infinite amounts of pressure on them, especially after you look at what they did on, you know, passing up a few years ago, you know, with Mahomes and whatnot. And so I don't know. I would say as far as who the hits are, I think Justin Fields is going to be a hit. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say that Trey Lance could be a hit. And the reason I'm saying that, strictly because he seems to like fit that like Kyler Murray, like Russell Wilson mold of like just being a mobile presence, like a good leader, that just this new age type of quarterback that's really we've seen come in and have like an immediate impact in NFL franchises. We see Lamar Jackson come in and have a direct impact. See Kyler Murray come in and have a direct impact. We see these, you know, these mobile, quicker quarterbacks, you know, the scramblers, you know, coming in and having an immediate impact in the NFL. And maybe, you know, as defenses and coaching and whatnot adjust to the, you know, the new style of quarterback, the new, you know, style of offense that's been kind of coming about over the last few years, maybe we'll see quarterbacks like that start to fade too in terms of their success. But yeah, I think I'm going to go with Fields and Trey Lance.
That's interesting because, you know, to me, there's an old saying, pick your hill to die on, right? Yeah. And my point is there's some intrinsic uncertainty in this. Like, you know, even the best GM in the world is wrong more than half the time about quarterbacks in the first round. I mean, that's what the data tells us. You
right.
got 20 out of 60 hits. You know, the smartest, best, most accomplished people in the world are missing all the time. But if I'm going to put my money on someone and the keys to the franchise of someone, I'm not putting that in a quarterback that's throwing 300 passes in FBS football. That, do you know that no quarterback drafted in the first round in the last like 50 years has thrown less passes than Trey Lance in college? He's only thrown 360 something passes. Okay. He hasn't played in over a year. He has only played 16, 17 games, which you could say the same things about Mac Jones. So I put Lance as a miss. I think if I'm going to miss, I'm going to miss on Fields, who's played at the highest level and shown it at college. I'm going to miss on Jones. I'll miss on Trevor Lawrence. Okay. I'm not missing on Trey Lance because he can throw the ball pretty in a pair of gym shorts. That, to me, there's too much uncertainty with his game that I don't know if that's going to translate to the NFL. So I put Lance as a miss. I think Zach Wilson will be a miss, even though I think the Jets made the smart move taking a shot on him. I know that's kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth. I think if you really look at it, I mean, this is a quarterback that lost to Coastal Carolina last year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he burst on the scene playing again, not top level competition at BYU. Exactly. I mean, we've seen other quarterbacks come from mid-major programs. Look at Josh Allen and be successful. But, you know, he's a small guy. He's diminutive. I don't know. Like I could see him being kind of a bust too. My hits are going to be Fields. I think is going to be good, especially in Chicago.
Yeah.
I like Jones. I really do. You know. And we'll talk a little about where I think his ceiling and his floor is in a little bit. And Trevor Lawrence, I think, will be a hit, but I'm not sold that he's going to be as great as everyone says he is. And you know, and I would bring up when we're talking Trevor Lawrence. I mean, look at Andrew Luck's career. I mean, he had a good career. Lasted 8 years. Never won a Super Bowl,
right.
Put up some big numbers, never really won in the playoffs consistently, you know, and had some deficiencies in his game. He turned the ball over all the time. You know, Lawrence might be that. You know, if he never wins a championship, does that make him hit? Well, I'd say probably, yeah. I mean, you know, even still. But I think you're going to see Fields, Jones, and Lawrence be good, and I think you're going to see Lance and Wilson be your busts.
But so let me ask you this, though. Of the five, do you think – there's a better argue other than Mac Jones, because actually now that I say it to myself, Mac Jones too. But so let's throw Mac Jones out there, because obviously, you know, we're Patriots fans, we're a little biased. But let's talk about the other four. I think Trey Lance might be stepping into the best situation for immediate success.
I agree with that, but he's not going to get on the field this year. He's a total 3-year project because he hasn't played in a year. He's played subpar competition. Like, he's a guy that's, you know, I mean, look how bad Josh Allen was in his rookie year. And even a little bit in his second year, still inconsistent. You know, Josh Allen gives hope to the Trey Lances of the world. But I'm going to tell you something. As being a sports fan for a long time, and 90% of the time when that super talented, undeveloped, raw guy comes out, he ends up being a total bust. And the reward is high, but the risk is high.
Yeah.
And that's Trey Lance. And I personally would, if I'm going to take a gamble like that, I at least want it to be on someone that played last year.
Yeah.
And threw the ball in college. And he didn't do either of those things.
Yeah. There's actually two other picks I do want to touch on real quick. One that I love, and one that I want to say I hate it. And deep down, I do hate it because, it just didn't make sense, I think, in principle when you looked at the team on paper. But, you know, the one I love is Najee Harris going to the Steelers. I think that was a great pick by them. I think he is going to be an absolute tank in the NFL. And he just seems like a really good dude. You know, he was talking about how he threw the party, like, at the homeless shelter that he grew up in, you know, for all the kids. And he just seems like a very, like, humble, down-to-earth dude. And, like, when you watch his highlights, he's literally Derrick Henry Jr. Like, so, and especially given that seemed to be the missing piece in the Steelers game last season, especially like once the wheels started to fall off in the second half of the year when they were really exposed, they couldn't run the ball for shit. You know, so I think Najee Harris and the Steelers is going to be a great fit. The pick that I hated at the time, and again, it might turn out to be great for them. The pick that I hated at the time was Ja'Marr Chase to the Bengals, and I'll tell you why I hate the pick. Because a wide receiver, he might be a generational receiver, and I understand the philosophy of best available player. Joe Burrow wanted him, their boys, reuniting them in college. A wide receiver, if you look at the Bengals roster, a wide receiver may have been the last thing that team needed, especially when you have someone like Joe Burrow coming off of ACL surgery, and you have someone like Penei Sewell who's right there waiting to be drafted, and you go out and you draft a wide receiver. I don't know. I think that was a little irresponsible, maybe.
Well, you just hit on actually two of the things I was going to bring up later. So you were thinking right along the same lines as me, but maybe in a different light. The Najee Harris thing really raises an interesting question. There were two running backs, I think, taken in the first round. You know, the role of running back has changed so much, and the value of running back has changed so much. That's the biggest difference, I think, from one of the biggest difference from 20, 30 years ago, where running back used to be like a super important, coveted position. If you had a guy like, I don't know, a little before my time, Walter Payton, or Emmitt Smith, or Barry Sanders, you know, that was like having a franchise quarterback. It made you like instantly competitive. And it just feels like, for whatever reason, the position has become totally devalued in the last like 5-10 years. When does it make sense to draft a running back in the first round? How good does the running back have to be? Because as great as you say Najee Harris was as a pick, and I agree with you, he has the potential to be a total stud. Damian Harris, that many people were saying was the best running back or one of them in football for the Patriots last year, he was a fourth round pick.
Right.
And there are consistently top caliber running backs that are coming out of the middle late rounds. So, you know, as good as Harris may or may not be, how good does a running back have to be to justify taking him with any first round pick? And of course, we're all burned as Patriots fans because we just wasted a pick on Sony Michel.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to look at the team, right? It's a team specific thing, the way I'm looking at it, and saying that for the Steelers, the running game seemed to be their real only missing piece of the puzzle last year. And we saw how once their offense became one dimensional, they were 10-0, they went to Washington, they lost to Washington, and then what, they lost like four out of their next five, something like that.
Yep, four out of the last eight.
Is that what it was?
Yep.
Okay. So
they were 8-0 when they went to Washington. Yep.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So anyway, we saw that in this, you know, once they became a one-dimensional team, they collapsed. So for them, when you see a player like Najee Harris out there and you say, okay, now literally that could be the missing puzzle for our team, then I think the pick makes more sense. If you're just a team, you know, at the bottom of the barrel looking to rebuild your franchise, Najee Harris is not my building block. But if he's the missing piece to your puzzle, like he is with the Steelers, then I can understand it.
You know, because like I would say, and I'm just going to throw a name out there, LaDainian Tomlinson, right?
Yeah.
Probably the best all-purpose back, or one of the best all-purpose backs I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Watched him in college. Could tell he was going to be a stud, right? Did everything, caught the ball, ran with speed, ran with power, could catch, agility, everything, okay? When I watched Travis Etienne play in college, he reminds me of LaDainian Tomlinson. Tomlinson was the third pick when he came out 20 years ago. Etienne barely made it into the bottom of the first round. I think Etienne is the kind of player that can change a game, but the position's so devalued. I just don't think, personally, that it makes sense to take a running back in the first round unless you truly feel like he's a franchise-changing back, like Tomlinson was. But I'm not sure how many of those guys exist right now. I mean, you know, Christian McCaffrey, he changes the game. I mean, how many franchise changing backs are there in the league right now?
I would say,
I wouldn't say Ezekiel Elliott is one, and he just went top five.
No, I would say maybe,
Fournette's already getting bumped around the league, you know,
Kamara, maybe,
Kamara was
Barkley,
right.
You know, when he's healthy,
but I'm not a Barkley guy.
Guy.
Not at all. He is so average. He's a combination of being above average and playing in New York. And he is so overrated. Kamara was what, a fourth round pick? Something like
that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, again, it's
who would you rather have now, Alvin Kamara or Saquon Barkley?
Are we talking about from this point in time? I think I think I'll take Alvin Kamara just because he's proven, and the health thing is big for me. I'll never know if you'll get a full season out of Saquon Barkley again, especially someone like that. You know, he's so friggin' big. Like, it almost looks like his body shouldn't be able to like move and like be flexible and shit. You know what I mean? Like, he's like an injury waiting to happen.
Well, and you raise a great point too, because, you know, Ezekiel Elliott was a franchise changing back in his first year or two in Dallas.
Yeah.
And he's not anymore. I think this is his fourth or fifth year.
Yeah.
And I think he's already past his prime.
Well, do you consider Derrick Henry a franchise changing back?
I do. And And I do.
So, I mean,
I guess I do. I don't know, though, you know, because it's hard to say. Like, it seems like that team's pretty well-built team, too. Henry definitely changes the game. He's not your average guy that just takes what's there.
Right.
You know, he makes plays. I mean,
I feel like he makes the defense game plan for him.
And he makes the defense game plan for him. That's a fair point. So I guess I'd have to say, yeah, I do consider Henry to be that guy. But again, he was a second-round pick, wasn't he?
I'd have to check that.
But I guess, I mean, look, if you think you got Derrick Henry, then I think you take him with a first-round pick. But if you, I mean, you got to be really sure that he's going to be the guy, because it just seems like the position, there's so many guys that come into the league and they're pretty good players and they're drafted all over the draft, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
So,
and you're right, Derrick Henry, second-round pick.
I thought so, yeah. So Mac Jones plays a totally different type of quarterback than Cam Newton. Okay. Yep. He falls into the classic paradigm of the Charlie Weiss, Josh McDaniels, Belichick offense that goes really back to Ron Erhard in the Giants in the 80s. And just that pocket passer, accurate, quick decisions, you know, good leadership, decent arm, but not going to blow the barn door off, you know, with his throws. Where does this leave Cam Newton? If the future of the franchise is going to be built around a guy like Mac Jones, what does this leave for the future of Newton? And is there any possibility, and I should qualify this because I know Belichick said that Cam's our quarterback. I can't take hearing that again, okay? But is there any chance Cam Newton is not on the 2021 Patriots?
I'm going to say no. I don't think there's a chance that he's not on the Patriots. I think for the simple fact that if anything, he is someone that the locker room likes and respects. And so if you have that, if you have a quarterback that the locker room likes and respects, I think, you know, he's dirt cheap. What are we going to get rid of him for? Like,
yeah, I mean, they have him on a great deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's a team-friendly deal. I just think, is it possible that if Stidham steps up and plays well, that maybe there's no role for Cam Newton on the team? Like, is it possible that there's competition and he's the odd man out? You know, I don't know, but are you going to, if you have to roll with two quarterbacks, are you going to take Stidham, whose game is similar to Jones's, or are you going to take Newton? And I guess a lot of that depends on how Stidham looks in the preseason. You know, Newton's got way more experience. He's respected. Maybe it's ridiculous, but I'm just wondering if, you know, is there any chance he's not on the team? And then where does this leave his future with the franchise? I mean, he's kind of on a dead-end street right now, if nothing else.
I mean, look, I think that's kind of one of the things that excites me, is you put a guy with his back against the wall and something to prove out there, and you finally give him weapons and a supporting cast around him worthy of winning games. It is a little exciting to think what could potentially happen, especially, you know, the first couple of weeks of the season last year before he got COVID. You know, he looked pretty good. Patriots in general looked pretty good. You know, we are talking about a former NFL MVP, brought a team to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
So again, I'm personally excited to see what Cam Newton does this year. And again, you know, I guess my question would be, how short do you think is his leash?
Like, when does Mac Jones become the starter?
Well, what's it going to take? Because I don't think it's
somewhat dependent on how Newton,
right,
performs.
I think it's performance. I don't think
if Belichick, we have the Newton would, from last year,
you're right.
When does Jones get the ball?
I think probably maybe week four.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's sooner.
Yeah.
Sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
I really do.
Well, because I think too, what you brought up a good point is that there's such different types of quarterbacks that if you're going to form the identity of your team and
right,
have it gel and mold ready for, you know, the playoffs, you know, you got to make that decision too. Then
and don't forget, the trend now in the league is for these guys to come in and play right away.
Right.
Like, these guys don't sit for two, three, 4 years anymore. Guys are coming in their rookie year. Tagliavoa last year, Justin Herbert. You know, you go back and look over the last few years. These guys play right now. And I think it is easier to make that jump than it's been in the past because they got all these rules now that favor passing the ball. They don't get hit as much as they used to. It's much easier to play quarterback now than it used to be. Now, it's all relative, of course, and it's still kind of washes out at the end of the day. You still need a good quarterback, but they've made these rules so favorable to passing that these young guys can come in and they can perform. And that was not the case in the past. So, I mean, it's going to be a problem because you're going to spend time preparing for the Cam Newton offense. And then what happens if he throws 3 touchdowns and 6 picks in 4 games and they're 2-2 and he looks like shit again and every ball's at someone's ankles and now you want to go to Mac Jones and you got to totally change what you're doing on the field.
Well, I think that's why I think what we're seeing is that they're building a run first team. They went out and beefed the lineup. They re-signed, you know, some players like Karras. They went out and brought Trent Brown back.
James White. Drafted a running back from Oklahoma.
I really do think this is going to be a run first team. I think they're going to kind of take it back to, you know, just like, what was it, 2018 when we went into, you know, we ran all over the playoffs, went into Kansas City, ran all over them, and then, you know, ran all over the Rams in the Super Bowl. That, I think that's going to be what they go back to. And when you have, I guess, a run first team, very run heavy, I guess it makes the transition from one style of quarterback to another a little bit
easier. And
they're
going to have the defense to play that
way.
They're going to have the defense to play that way this year. That's a good point. Okay, so there was a lot of smoke around the Jimmy G situation.
Yeah.
You know, and when there's that much smoke, doesn't there have to be a little fire? But it seems like right now that's dead in the water. I don't think there's any real chance that Jimmy G comes here now. And it's not even so much because of the Patriots, because I still think if they could get him for the right price, they'd bring him in and probably cut Newton. But I think it's more because the Niners invested in Trey Lance, and he's no way is he ready for this year, I don't think. Or I'd be shocked if he was. So, and they feel like they're ready to compete for a Super Bowl. So I think they hang on to Jimmy G. But I guess my question for you is, are you disappointed that they didn't get Jimmy G? My thought was that if they brought in Garoppolo for like a second-round pick or a second-round pick next year, and if one of those like Alabama receivers or one of those good defensive players had fallen to them, this is a Super Bowl caliber team again with Garoppolo and the talent they have built on this roster.
Yeah.
Now it seems like a little bit of a less clear path this year, but a better, more of a future rebuilding path. Are you disappointed that Jimmy G didn't come here? And do you think is there any chance he still ends up in New England?
I'm not disappointed. I think, look, it's one of those things where, you know, when he left, it obviously wasn't ideal. I kind of, you know, I wanted him to stay. I think we all, like Jimmy, were getting accustomed to him maybe taking over the reins at some point. You know, we were happy with what we saw when he stepped in. But, you know, he goes over to San Francisco, and at first, you know, he starts lighting it up. I'm pretty sure, what was it? He won, like, his first, like, it was something crazy. Like, he won, like, his first, like, X amount of games in a row, like, right off the bat.
The year the Pats traded him, he looked great. Right, they were kind of out of it. He came in and changed.
Right, he went off. Yeah. And then, because, but then the next year, I think they started, like, 3-0 or something like that. So he had won, like, 10 consecutive games or something like that, like, as their starter.
Yeah.
So he was lighting it up. And then,
he blew his ACL out.
Right, he blew his ACL out. And then, obviously, he hasn't been able to stay in the field. He hasn't been healthy. He hasn't looked right.
Right. 23-6 or something like that as a starter or something like that. That's a legit track record of success.
Right.
And you bring him here, and if he can stay on the field, they're going to win games.
But for me, I think that's a big if. If he can stay in the field. So, I don't know. Look, the combination of if he can stay in the field, again, with the fact that, you know, he left, there's all this hype. And his thing, Belichick's not, his thing is always block out the noise and do your job, right? The hype of bringing Jimmy G back after all the controversy it caused when he was here and when he left, I don't think Belichick wants to expose the team to that. I don't think he wants to put everybody through the nonstop, like, oh, the return of Jimmy G saga, like all this. And, you know, inevitable narratives that, you know, the Boston sports media that's ruthless, you know, we're just going to harp on 24/7. I don't know. I'm not mad that he's not here. I kind of see it as, hey, he had a brief stint here. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. But
well, here's the thing. Garoppolo's like, he's almost 30.
Yeah.
He's got a huge injury history, like you said.
Right.
And we still don't know for sure. In fact, most people would say he's probably not a true franchise quarterback. I think sometimes his accomplishments gets diminished because the Super Bowl where things didn't go well in the fourth quarter, because he's missed so much time with injury, you know, because he's not physically dominant or impressive. But it's probably not the case that we're dealing with the next, like, Aaron Rodgers, Breeze level type guy here. Jones at least represents hope, you know, that maybe you've got the next franchise guy. I guess we'll see. You don't know. He might totally suck. He might totally be, you know, a bust. But I think it's a plan. It's a direction. And I personally prefer this route over bringing back Garoppolo, because, you know, with Garoppolo, good player, but fundamentally flawed player. Fundamentally flawed with limitations. And Jones is more of hope. And I think that as a fan, I am so glad that this franchise has a direction. When they picked Mac Jones, I stood up and cheered. No, I have no idea if Mac Jones is going to be any good, but at least there's hope. At least there's direction now. There was none. And that was a terrible year in 2020, if only for the reason that we didn't know where the franchise was headed. For the first time in 30 years, we didn't know who the guy was.
Yeah. And honestly, the thing I'll say about Mac Jones, too, is he seems to me like he has like a good type of energy and a good vibe. Like, he seems like he's like someone who can come in, and as long as he performs up to par, can win and hold the locker room.
Absolutely. All right, let's do a couple quick hit thoughts around the league, and then I think we're going to have to wrap it up because I know we're getting close to the end of the time that we have. So, a couple teams, okay? You brought up the Bengals, and on this one, we totally agree.
Yeah.
But tell me one team that you think, or what teams you think really blew it on Thursday, and were there any teams you thought really nailed it? Because the Bengals are one of my teams that blew it. The Bengals and the 49ers. I think the 49ers blew this thing so bad. Drafting Lance, alienating Garoppolo, not pulling the trade off. You know, I don't know what they were doing. Talking in the media, just keep your mouth quiet. You know, you don't have to say you're drafting a quarterback. Don't say anything, you know?
Right.
Anyways, go ahead.
You know, as far as blowing it, wow.
The Bengals,
I definitely think the Bengals blew that pick. Again, whether Ja'Marr Chase, you know, works out or not, I just think, you know, in theory, the pick was just very flawed.
You have a quarterback coming off an ACL injury.
Yeah.
And you've got a garbage offensive line, and you already got a couple good wide receivers. And you could make the case that Penei Sewell, the tackle they passed on, he was maybe the best player in the draft. If you read the scouting reports, like, if you look just based on pure talent taking position out of it, he might have been number one.
Right.
So you pass on him. And you bring in another wide receiver. They already got good wide receivers on that team. They need someone that can block.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so interesting that the first five picks, it's such a reflection of the league. Six picks were all skill position players.
Yeah.
Tight end never went as high as the Falcons took Kyle Pitts. That's the highest the tight end's ever gone.
Is it?
And they got they had a historically bad defense last year. Terrible defense. How many big leads did that Falcons team give up? And they have a chance to draft any number of top level defensive backs, linebackers available. What do? They take a tight end. Great. Matt Ryan's going to throw for 4,200 yards again. Guess what? They'll be 6-10.
Yeah.
They'll be 6-10.
I mean, I will say a team that, I liked a couple of their picks, the Ravens. I'll say it's always a sure thing that, you know, the Ravens are going after some sort of stud linebacker or, you know, defensive lineman. Odafe Owe, I think his first name's Patrick, I think it goes by Odafe. He sat this year out, played for Penn State. Kind of the general consensus, probably one of the best linebackers, overall defensive players in the draft. You got to like that after they lose Judon and a few other players going out and getting him. And then they also went out and got Rashad Bateman from Minnesota. You know, helping out Lamar Jackson and you know, Hollywood Brown a little bit.
How about the Giants, right? I think you want to talk about a team that nailed it, right? They move down from 11 to 20. They pick up a first round pick next year, and then they grab, I think, a really exciting slot. I love those shifty slot players, those undersized receivers. I think especially, I've always loved them even way back when, but now, going in today's game where speed is just, it just kills because you can barely tackle anymore.
Yeah.
A guy like that is going to be super, super productive. Now, you know, if I was the Giants, I might've looked at taking another quarterback because I'm not sure Daniel Jones is the guy, right. But they made that investment in Jones. They're going to ride it out another year. Okay. Give him that third year, which he probably deserves. And they brought in a huge weapon to help him. And they picked up some draft capital next year. If Jones isn't the guy and he flames out again, they're going to have the draft assets they need to move up and get the next guy if they need to.
Yeah, they position themselves well.
They position themselves well.
Also, another team real quick that I'm just scrolling through now because I remember at the time being like, what the hell are they doing? It was similar to the Bengals in the sense that I thought that they took a position that was probably the least needed on their roster. And that's the Green Bay Packers going and taking a cornerback. Yeah. With their first pick. Forget about what they did in the past with, you know, Jordan Love and, A.J. Dillon. What are they doing? I would say defensive back is maybe where the Packers are their deepest. And they go out and take a defensive back in the first round.
Does it strike you as just a slap in the face to Rodgers?
A little bit.
You're not going to tell us how we're going to run our franchise.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, that whole thing was crazy how that all broke on draft night.
Right.
And now all of a sudden the MVP of the league is on the trade block. And hey, he didn't go. So I wouldn't close the door entirely on him being traded somewhere either.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, everyone was talking about Denver. Obviously, you know, Denver got Teddy Bridgewater, but I don't think anyone's planning on Teddy Bridgewater, you know, being your Super Bowl franchise, you know, quarterback. But it was I think it was telling to me that Denver didn't take a quarterback because they easily could have. And the fact that they didn't tells me that there might be some hope and some legitimacy to the fact that maybe they're still pursuing Aaron Rodgers. There might be some teams out there. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not a Packer. I mean, you know, just from his standpoint alone, you know, the disrespect of going out and drafting, like, you know, Jordan Love last year when he needed plenty of help in plenty of other areas, I think, you know, and then going on, like I said, drafting a cornerback this year when they're so deep at defensive back just doesn't make sense. Again, like you said, it seems like a slap in the face. I don't really know what they're doing.
It does, but I was going to bring up Denver because they had the opportunity to take a quarterback, and it seems like right now they continue to make this huge investment in Drew Locke. They were going to be one of my teams that I think blew it. Like, what are they seeing from Drew Locke that the rest of the world doesn't see? I don't get it. I watch this guy play. I mean, he's got a great arm. He turns the ball over all the time. He's not super productive. They got good receivers. I don't think he's really elevating that team. If I've had a guy start for me for like a year plus and I've gotten this little from him, I mean, you're making a huge gamble by passing when a franchise quarterback falls to you. And the bottom line is that both Fields and Jones were there and they passed on both of them. And they're rolling with Drew Locke. And I think that's going to be a big, big, big mistake. And then one last team, Justin, what did you think of what the Jets did? I said that, you know, I mean, I think in getting rid of Sam Darnold was the best decision they made in 25 years. And I mean that because, you know, I wanted them to keep Sam Darnold. I don't understand why people have such a hard time wrapping their head around that Sam Darnold sucks. And you got another team, Carolina, that also could have taken a quarterback and decided not to. And they're rolling, apparently, with Sam Darnold. They traded Teddy Bridgewater. What is it about this guy? You know, I've never seen anything on the field from him. He went to USC. He looks the part. You know, he was the number two pick. Beyond that, why does anyone think he's a franchise quarterback after, what is he, 3 years as a starter? He just hasn't shown it on the field. And, you know, I'm shocked that a franchise is willing to invest in him. We have seen so many quarterbacks taken in the top five be total busts.
Look, I agree. I would, my only, just to play devil's advocate, you know, would be that if Sam Darnold didn't go to maybe the biggest dumpster fire in the NFL for the last couple of years, that we could be talking about a really different story. If he, you know, I think that given his raw talent that, you know, we've seen, he hasn't performed up to par, but he has raw talent. Again, he's a young kid. He's only 23 years old. There are definitely some organizations that I think if he had gone to them right out of college, it would be a completely different story. Like Josh Allen, he went into a great situation at Buffalo. Obviously, we got to see his development. Now he's turning into one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I'm not saying that's Sam Darnold's, but if Sam Darnold went to, you know, the Bills, could he have potentially, you know, turned into a good quarterback, you think?
Let me answer that. No. He could if what you're saying is true, he would have at least elevated a little bit the play around him. I just don't see anything. I mean, the Patriots have played this guy, I think, 5 or 6 times. I don't know. I just don't see anything on the field from him that makes me think he could be a franchise quarterback. And you know what? Taking a flyer on a guy when you draft someone and maybe he can hold the fort down, that's one thing. You know, giving the keys to the franchise to Sam Darnold like the Panthers did, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, you pass on quarterbacks in this draft. You're invested in this guy. He's someone else's retread. The Jets, the worst franchise in pro sports. They didn't want him. Now you do. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Okay, man. I think that's about all the time we have. So any final thoughts or anything, Justin?
Honestly, you know what? I have one more quick question for you. What do you think about the Jaguars going out and grabbing Travis Etienne after someone like James Robinson has the monster breakout year he had last year?
I thought that was interesting. I really did, because Robinson was kind of a stud last year. Yeah. And like we said, I mean, running backs are a dime a dozen. If you've got someone, you draft someone in the middle rounds, you know, don't you want a lineman or right. someone? I mean, there's plenty of holes on that Jacksonville roster. So
yeah.
I thought that was a curious move. But like I said, you know, Etienne, I think he comes out 20 years ago. He's a top 5 pick in the draft and he's changing games, but right. you know, the landscape of the game has shifted so much. So, he's one of the players I'll be watching as we move forward into 2021. Cause that was a interesting pick.
Yep.
Okay, man. Well, listen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank everyone out there for listening to the Dr. Football Podcast. My name is Dr. Dennis Tien, Justin Fine producing the show and helping me out. We will be back in 2 weeks, Justin, I think it is, with another episode.
Yeah, we'll be back. I will plan accordingly. I'll be have my brain functioning.
Well, I think you did good today. go out and get hammered the night before.
We're getting a little better, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Well, hopefully we helped you wake up a little. And, you know, by the time we do this again, the schedule will be out.
Yep.
I think mini camps will be starting, and we'll try to keep the topics going till we can get to training camp in the summer.
Let's do it, guys. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much, everyone. Have a great day and be well. Take care.